Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of How Do We Sound. I am fresh off the boat. On mod. I'm not actually sure that would be the correct. Anyway, fresh off the board from America, I'm back and ready to chat to somebody else who is sounder than I am. If you've never listened before, this is How to Be Sound. It is a podcast where people who are sounder than me tell me about how to be sound like they are, kind of. If you're a new listener, you also will not know that I have a Patreon page, patreon.com/RosemaryMcKay with an A in my Mac. Links to all the different ways you can pay my rent will be in the show notes. But for now, let's get to our guest. Today I am joined by Margaret McAuliffe, aka Mags McAuliffe, only to her friends. She made sure to tell me. Mags, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here, Rosemary McKay, with an A in the Mac.
Mags is what our parents would call like an arty person. You wear a few different hats, don't you?
Yeah, I'm an actor, writer. I was an Irish dancer, which was more like a hobby, which has now become my profession in that I wrote a show about Irish dancing. But yeah, you have to be all things when you're a slasher. That is, I was an actor slash waiter slash temp slash whatever. And only now since 2016, I've been able to make the creative arts my full-time occupation. And so, yeah, I suppose you have to be in charge of your own PR. You have to promote yourself online and you have to be your own accountant.
But you know what? That's not necessarily confined to the arts anymore.
Yeah.
I'm going to reference the article that I reference in every single episode of my podcast on millennial burnout from BuzzFeed. Did you read that article?
No, I didn't.
It was very interesting. It was talking about how we're the only generation that never switches off and that spends our time, whether subconsciously or not, creating and curating our own brands and our own PR online and kind of going like, boomers laugh at millennials and go, oh, you know, they're always giving out about being tired. They're always giving out about being stressed. We didn't know what anxiety was, but like you didn't have to be on 24 hours a day. So it's very, very different. You mentioned that you've only been full time in the arts since 2016. Can you tell me a little bit about your journey up to that point? So like, what did you study? Did you always think that you were going to go into kind of theatre, directing, writing, or what was it that you originally planned for, if one can have a plan?
Yeah, I suppose I wanted to be an actor since I was 17. I did the Belvedere Opera in 2000.
What the fuck is the Belvedere Opera?
It's their musical. But
in Belvedere College?
Yeah.
They call it the Belvedere. I thought that was a boys' school.
It is, but they...
Do they just ship in the girls for the opera?
They audition the girls. Yeah. And it's the social event of the year because...
The south side is a foreign country.
It's well, not no,
it's
south
it's
side.
The north side.
It's north side. It's around
sorry,
the corner.
Sorry, posh north side is a foreign country.
So yeah, they auditioned for girl parts and a friend of mine was going along and she brought me and I did this show. It was Candide, Leonard Bernstein's Candide, a big Scottish opera. And we had huge costumes, you know, with the big skirts and the hoops
only
underneath them.
Only in private school, I'm telling you.
Oh yeah, full orchestra that had been rehearsing the music for
what?
Months. Yeah, it was incredible.
And did you sing like before this?
I did. I sang in choir and I sang, you know, if they wheeled the minister for finance out to the school and would have a little recital, they'd be like, Mags will sing, you know, Kissing You by Desiree.
We had Michelle Smith at our school.
Oh, did she swim?
Let's
for them?
Move on. No. She went to our primary school before the medals.
Oh, I see. Well, that's your
I mean,
fame.
And after, I guess we just don't talk about it anymore. Carry on.
Oh, no, cool. I was just thinking, as soon as you said Michelle Smith, I saw Sonia Sullivan yesterday. She was getting coffee downstairs from me. I was very excited.
Every single time my mom sees Sonia Sullivan, her reaction is, she looks very old.
Oh, no.
You're like, well, she's done more running in her entire life than like the six of us put together.
Yeah.
So she's probably a little bit tired, mum.
Ah, God.
She's been out in the sun a lot.
I was like...
Oh, she's amazing.
I was doe-eyed with admiration. Loads of people were. They were just like, as she walked by. But anyway, I'm sure she gets that all the time. Where was I? Oh yeah, so did the show in the Belvedere Opera and thought, oh my God, what is this thing? The audience were laughing, really engaging.
Basically these boys who haven't seen a woman in months.
Years. No, well, I hadn't seen a boy because I went at all girls school. So like it was all kicking off, you know, there was people fancying other people. It was like Love Island, but in 2000.
And was there a lot of romance North City. Backstage?
Well, of course. You would have a list of who you liked and then that would be like cross-referenced against a list of who they liked.
Oh, okay.
So it was kind of...
I thought you were going to say who your friends liked. No,
well, yes. I mean, there's that also.
Like, how many did you take off the list?
Well, one. I got with the guy who was working in lighting. So still involved, but not on the stage. Well, not in the cravat.
There's only space in a relationship for one star. So that makes sense. You're the star and he will light you beautifully throughout your life.
I should get my light.
And you're still together to this day.
No, I wish. Imagine that would be such a funny story. Yeah, so I wanted to be an actor from then. But in school, I was very diligent. And my mom was kind of like, well, would you not, you know, do a degree. Get your bit of paper. And put that in your back pocket and then go and do your acting.
Where is your mum from? This is a very generic Irish mammy accent.
She is from Cork, but okay. She's lived in Dublin longer than she's ever lived in Cork. And I know it's a very generic mother accent, but it is her to a T.
Is it? Because mine's from Kimmage and I probably do a similar country accent for her. You know, it's where my mam, Irish mammies.
I actually did. Oh, I wrote her into my show, The Humours of Bandon, which I'm sure we'll get to. She came to see it the first time and I turned to her. I said, well, what do you think? And she said, I think I came across very well.
I thought you were going to say that she was like, I hated that one.
No, she's like, that's it now. Yeah. But anyway, I want to be an actor. So I did a degree in multimedia. So we did.
So Irish. I wanted to be an actress. So I did a degree in multimedia.
It was like, this was the bit of paper in the back pocket. So it was a creative degree. I could still immerse myself in DCU drama if I wanted and kind of, have the college experience, I guess, and amass some skills that would be very handy should the acting not work out. Because I think it's quite important to have a few strings to your bow because it's so difficult to make a career from it full time. Yeah. So I did that and loved it, but spent most of my time in DCU drama. And then when I finished, as was kind of a rite of passage, went away traveling around the world for a year. We did, didn't we?
Well, I mean, I'm kind of making a face because I never did that. So like, yes.
But you're also younger than I am.
I'm 34.
Oh, right. So I thought you were younger than that now.
It's because I'm just back from America.
Wow.
Very fresh off the boat. No, it was more because basically friends and family are always kind of saying to me, oh, you know, do you really regret not going away? Should have gone away.
Oh.
And I'm like, ugh. But also, ugh, because probably the large reason that I didn't go away a lot of the time is because I've had a steady stream of boyfriends since I was about 11.
Oh,
so I was always like, I can't go away now. I have Brian at home.
Can't go away. Oh, God. Whereas I was eternally single. Never had a boyfriend.
You got to see the world and all I saw was like one willy over and over and over again.
And it was only when I was away that I met so many guys that were interested in me. And I was like, oh my God, maybe that's the thing. Maybe I need to leave Ireland and then people will find me attractive. Oh, wow. But anyway, I had a ball that year. It was the best year of my life. It was incredible. Came back and was like, I still want to be an actor. This hasn't gone away. And now is the time. So I was 24, just turning 25. So I said I would work to pay back my travelling debt and get a bit of money together for fees for college and then just start auditioning. So I auditioned for RADA. I go down to the third round in RADA, which for me was a huge stamp of approval because...
RADA's in London, isn't it?
Yeah, the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art, and it is the drama school. Like it's world renowned. And
how many rounds do they do?
That was the workshop round. And I think, would you do one more before they'd make the class?
It's a lot of rounds.
Yeah, it is, but it's highly contested. Oh, thousands apply. Yeah. You have to pay to apply. You have to pay £50 to send in your application. Or you did anyway.
It's like the NCT.
But when I got the letter to say that I was down to the third round, I remember I was like going out for a run and I was just like skipping out the door because I was smart enough to know that there's a lot of people out there that go, I'm going to be an actor. Mm-hmm. And they mightn't really have the chops.
Yeah. And there's probably going to be a lot of people in your life who think you're brilliant.
Yeah.
And genuinely believe that you're really talented. But until you get... somebody who really knows what they're talking about. Going,
yes.
Yeah, you could be quite talented. It can be hard to believe it.
Yes, absolutely.
Or it actually, far too many people do believe it. But I think it's important to get someone
else. Stamp of approval from a stranger. And that was the letter from Rada. I auditioned for a few colleges. I auditioned for DIT, the Gaiety School of Acting. And unfortunately, Trinity had ceased their Bachelor in Theatre Studies and hadn't yet begun the Lear Academy. So okay. I was in that kind of...
The in-between stage.
So I got into the Gaiety and I thought, this is perfect because I don't want to do another degree. I already have a degree. I want to get my training done to get out there into the world. So the Gaiety was a 2-year course. It was purely actor training. Was it full-time or part-time? Full-time. 8:15 to 6:15, Monday to Friday.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. And you cannot be late. If you're late by 30 seconds, you're like on it.
8:15?
Oh, yeah.
That's very early.
I know. And I was living at home at the time with my mum in Malahide. So the first bus out in the morning, but I was so dedicated and I was like, oh, this is what I want to do. So you didn't mind.
I think it's because like I did an arts degree and we had about 12 hours a week. So I'm like, that sounds very strenuous.
But that was my experience at college when I did multimedia. We had 18 contact hours a week and had the full college experience. And I remember there was a guy in my class who has left the profession now. He's working for Accenture or something. And we were coming in on Friday morning at 8:15 and he'd been out the Thursday night and he was hanging, you know, very hungover. And he said, God, like college is killer when it's 8:15 in the morning. And I was like, oh no, this isn't college. This is not.
Yeah.
This ain't college. This is school. This is acting school for sure.
And did you enjoy it?
Did I enjoy the training? I enjoyed immersing myself in theatre and the thing that I love to do full time. Yes. I was also a very mature 26, I think. Yeah, 25, just turned in 26. So I was very mature for my age. And I thought a lot of the time was taken up with kind of disciplining the class and giving out to them and scolding them. And we all had to, you know, be quiet. And I understood that. And I understood like that there's a way of getting things done. But I had to listen to a lot of us being lectured to about, you know, respect and cleaning up after yourselves. And I remember it all came to a head one day. I was in second year. I was in second half of second year. And we had been told in various meetings that we need to clean up after ourselves after lunch. And I am so neat. And like, you would never have to tell me to do that. But they said that the threat was, if you don't clean up after yourselves, you're not going to have any crockery and no cups or saucers to eat your food with next week. And so anyway, inevitably, as you can probably tell, the people left stuff. And so they got rid of everything. And I came in like a bull and I waited until lunchtime and I went down and I opened up the thing and there was no crockery. I shut the door. I went into the office and I was just like, I'm 27 years of age and I want a fork. They're like, give her a fork, give her a fork. So yeah, that I didn't enjoy so much.
What age was everyone else on the course?
Between the age of 18 and 24.
Okay, like okay.
But they were a very excitable kind of a class. Yeah. And as, you know, as is natural.
Yeah, of course.
They're drama students. They just finished the Leaving Cert and they got into the Gaiety and they really wanted to get into the Gaiety and they're like bursting with enthusiasm and creativity and like brilliant. But I just, yeah, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. So, are any of them like super famous now?
Well, Stephanie Preisner was in my class and we were always good friends throughout our 2 years together, which is why she came on board to direct my play, The Humours of Bandon. And she's kind of gone down the writing route now, as your listeners will probably know. So
she's just released a book called Why Can't I Say No?
Can I Say No?
Can I Say No?
Can I Say No? I always hear it in a Cork accent. Can I Say No? yes, she's just released that book hot on the heels of her first book, Why Can't Everything Stay the Same and Other Things I Think About When I Something. How could I forget the last word, but I have. But she also wrote Can't Go Bone Cope and plenty of other exciting projects in the pipeline for her too. But she was in my class, a theatre actress called Genevieve Hume-Beeman.
It's always the double barrelers, isn't it? A really hilarious list went around recently of the top lacrosse players in the US. I think it went around Twitter and it was literally like Henry Winkle Duff Murphy II. You know what I mean? It was all like not Murphy. It wasn't as ordinary as Murphy. But they were all double barreled and 80% of them had like the second, the first or like sir.
Yeah. That is funny. I think, yeah, a double barrel, it just affords you this air of mystery or I don't know.
Well, it depends on the double barrel, doesn't it?
Well, but they're always, people would be more interested, I think, to know, oh, well, they have three names now. Who are they? Why do they have three? And
somebody
I only have the
somebody
two.
Somebody was like slagging me off recently for not having a middle name, which felt like a very primary school thing. Rosemary doesn't have a middle name.
You don't have a middle name?
No.
Is that where you put the A in between the M and the C in the Mac?
No, I don't know. That was my dad. But now there's like...
He just decided.
No, like, so he claims that his dad was Philip McCabe, M-A-C space, not even just the A, M-A-C space, C-A-B-E. However, our cousins have omitted the space. They claim there was never a space. Dad claims there was absolutely a space. There's hijinks going on in the family.
Well, yeah, it's
age. Is there a space? Is there not a space? Who knows? And now I'm also like, it would have saved me a lot of time over my life if I could just get rid of the space and get rid of the A while I'm at it. But I kind of like the A.
No, that's your thing now. It's your USP.
Well, so tell me about, so you and Stephanie met in...
In the Gaiety.
The Gaiety School of Acting. And is The Humours of Bandon. So The Humours of Bandon is a play that started in 2016?
Yes.
It combines... like a bit about your life, but also your background in Irish dancing. Like,
yes.
Was Irish dancing what you would have done if you hadn't become an actor?
Oh, no. I wasn't good enough to do Irish dancing as a profession. No, no, no.
Do you think you would have been good enough if it wasn't for America? I often think those fucking Americans.
No, because...
You know what I mean? They take it so seriously and they go to all these like camps and shit and we don't have all that stuff. I mean, we have some camps and stuff, but like... I went to the... Now I'm totally... You don't get to answer this question.
No,
I'm just going to talk.
Answer it.
I went to the Irish Dancing World Championships when they were on at City West a couple of years ago.
Uh-huh.
And I just felt sorry for all the decent Irish girls. I was like, these Americans now who've been paying their tutors and like buying the most expensive dresses, would you fuck off back to America?
Have you seen the Irish Dancing documentary Jig?
No, but I should.
It's on YouTube. It's absolutely brilliant. But there are two dancers dancing under nine and they're like... going head to head.
There's nothing more frightening than an ambitious child. Like,
the
honestly.
The American one has her, like, physiotherapist. And
of course.
She has,
and
you know.
You know what else she probably has? Laser focus.
She
they
did.
Breed that into them over there.
She did. And then the Irish girl from Derry is just the cutest. She's like, my mother says, you know, if you have a talent, show everybody. And she is the sweetest kid. She wants to win for her grandmother.
That's probably a dangerous precedent to set. She wants to win for her grandmother.
Yeah, her grandmother bought her Irish dancing costume and then died. Yeah, so she wanted to win for her granny. So these two kids are going head to head.
Sorry,
I won't tell you what
spoiler
happens.
Spoiler alert. Yeah, but like...
No, no, don't. I won't.
Does she win? The one
I can't
Derry?
Tell you. You're going to have to watch
God.
It.
But do you think that you would have been good enough if it wasn't for the Americans?
I don't think so. I wasn't ever on that trajectory. I certainly loved my Irish dancing classes. I went twice a week and I went up through the grades and, you know, went to the All-Irelands every year.
If you're in America, you would have been gone 8 times a week. That's the difference.
But also, Riverdance... Okay, so the Riverdance as an interval act happened in 1994 and then the stage show 95, 96... So I went to college in 2001. So it was only really 5 years after Riverdance was making the rounds. So now there were offshoot shows. So there was Rhythm of the Dance.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Magic of the Dance. Fire of the Dance. I'm not even joking yet. Like, there were so many offshoots of that show. And then obviously Lord of the Dance as well.
Yeah, and there was loads like Celtic Rhythm.
Celtic Rhythm, yeah.
Yeah.
Celtic Fire. There was a lot of money to be made, but... I didn't audition for any of those shows. Also, the Irish dancing organisation that I was a part of didn't necessarily train us at the time in the style of dancing that was making it around the world.
Popular and lucrative.
Yeah, basically. And now it does. But certainly I didn't dance in that style. And I didn't really have any aspirations to join an Irish dancing troupe and tour around. Because I did that show when I was 17 and I thought, I want to be an actor. And so part of my reasoning of going to do multimedia in DCU was to, like, in my spare time, immerse myself in what it is that I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Whereas Irish dancing was always, and this is kind of one of the themes in the show, like, when you're just going along with something because it's something that you always did, as opposed to taking stock and actually deciding for yourself in the moment, do I want this? So yeah, I knew that I never wanted to join an Irish dancing troupe, but certainly there was money to be made and people have travelled the world and it's been great for them. Yeah.
The abs.
I have no interest in the abs.
I have no interest in dancing or in any kind of cardiovascular activity. I have no interest in being particularly fit, but I'd love the abs now you get from dancing.
The abs are their beast.
Incredible.
Yeah.
So good.
And I see kids like they're with this little one in the documentary Jig from Derry, you see her doing her crunches in her bedroom, and it's just like covered in like teddies and trophies, and you know, it's a very cute room,
it's
and she's
weird.
There like working out, doing her stretches. It's like, yeah.
Do you remember when we all used to read the interviews of Britney, and she used to claim to do like 2,000 sit-ups a day?
Oh, she did, didn't she? Yeah.
Like around the time of A Slave for You, and everyone was like, "Where'd you get that body from?" She was like, 2,000 sit-ups.
Yeah, was it 2,000?
Something like that.
Wow, where would you even find the time? Would she be doing her interviews like...
I mean, she never did that many interviews, did she?
Did she not?
I think she was just doing sit-ups and shows back to back. Non-stop. So tell me about... So The Humours of Bandon is about... Like, about Irish dancing,
but not
really...
Do you want the elevator pitch?
Do you want the what?
The elevator
yeah,
pitch?
Please.
The Humours of Bandon is a coming-of-age comedy about competitive Irish dancing.
And very
it's
good.
Loosely based on, I suppose, my personal experience of Irish dancing, as opposed to, you know, detailing what happened in my Irish dancing life. So it was like a lot of the characters are kind of based on an amalgamation of lots of different people I knew, as opposed to, mm-hmm. oh my God, I know exactly who that is. And
yeah,
I know exactly who that is. Because I felt it was really important for me to write something that I was removed from. Because every night you have to go there. And this mm-hmm, was some mm-hmm. solid advice given to me by Stephanie Preisner, because she had performed Sabadine as My Boyfriend over 200 times. And she said in it, she was talking about, you know, a breakup. And every night that she did that show, she had to go through that again.
Oh, I get
she was
you.
Like,
yeah,
I'm
yeah.
so over that. But every night I have to relive
have to get
it.
Back into it yeah.
So just be careful to like not... write something too close to you right now, because you have to go back there and you might be well past it by the time you still have to perform.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was really good advice. One of many. She is like an oracle.
Stop going on about Stephanie Preisner.
I know.
This is not it's about Stephanie Preisner. This is about you. This is about Margaret McAuliffe.
Thanks, Rosemary McCabe.
And is that the first project that you worked on together?
Yes, outside of college, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly we did little bits and pieces together in college, and we always respected each other greatly, and very similar sense of humour as well.
I wonder if Stephanie would listen to this and be like, God, I hated her for the first 5 months. She had no idea.
No, she often relives this moment where I went off to get a snack or something, and I had
fork?
A snack bar. No, like a snack bar. And I gave some to... a girl that I ended up living with for a while, and I didn't give any to Stephanie, and she's like, "You didn't give me your snack bar." I'm like, "Oh God, how I regret that decision."
But snack bars are pretty small as well, Stephanie. So like,
yeah, no, I know. It was just
if you're sharing with one person, you're not getting a lot of snack yourself.
But anyway, then she directed The Humours of Bandon, and all is forgiven.
And how did the idea for The Humours of Bandon? It's, I mean, this to me, no offense, is slightly ghastly. You're like playing a 16-year-old in this play.
Yeah, I know. The thing with The Humours of Bandon is I play many parts. I play like 7, 8 different parts. And so the older I get, I'm actually getting closer to playing the teacher and the mother. So playing the Annie, the protagonist, is just another stretch. So I'm kind of in the middle point to play all of these other characters.
Yeah.
And when my hair is all in my long plait with the orange ribbons in it, and I have my green t-shirt on and my green leggings and my Irish dancing pumps and my poodle socks on, and I say like, "So I'm finished dancing and I'm watching the under and over 19s. And, you know, you're far enough away from me not to see my crow's feet. You can just hear my voice and see the way I'm carrying myself. It's acting, and I can get away with it. The mother then is total caricature. No, she's based on my own mother, but she's, you know, she's kind of, I've hunched over her shoulders and I've made decisions in the hands and stuff like that to really emphasize, because you don't have any costume changes in a one woman show. You don't have any set. You just have yourself. So in order to differentiate between the protagonist is talking now, Annie's talking, or the mother or the teacher, you have to make slight little adjustments in your physicality and your voice to bring the audience right in. So
yeah,
so that they're not confused
to know who's talking now.
Yeah.
And so how did it come about? Did you come up with the idea and say to Stephanie, "I'd like you to direct this"?
No, it actually happened I had my pal Ronan Phelan, who I was speaking about earlier. I had him in mind to be the director. And unfortunately,
hates
fortunately
you.
For him,
He was like, Mags, no, no.
No, stop calling me. Actually, it wasn't him. It was his secretary. No, so he was going over to the Abbey to, he was assisting on Plough and Stars at the time. So he was going to be away. He was only ever going to be there for kind of the rehearsal period and maybe the opening night, and then would have to shoot off to America. And thought, no, I want to be able to like really look after the show if I take it on. And so I was meeting up with Stephanie and we'd be having coffee and she's writing Can't Go Bone Cope and she's, you know, she's flying it and we'd meet up for chats and I'm like, okay, Ronan won't do it. And she's like, okay, who can we think of? And she had a list. And so I asked somebody on the list that she gave me and that person was really enthusiastic about doing it. And then something happened in their private life that they couldn't commit to it anymore. So the person actually said to me, you know, go back to Ronan and, you know, really guilt him about this. So I went back to Ronan. I was like, please. And his gaff and Stony better. And he's like, oh, I can't. I can't. Oh, I would want to give myself over to it totally. He's like, then I said something like, well, Stephanie thinks. And he's like, why don't you just ask Stephanie? And she's not, you know, a theatre director by profession. I mean, she certainly has directed plays before when she was in youth theatre and just after the Gaiety. And she did a one-woman show herself, Salpadine is My Boyfriend and Our Father. So I went back to, and as luck would have it, the next day she just rang me for a chat and I was like, oh, Ronan had the craziest idea. And she was so busy at the time, Rosemary. I can't tell you just how little time she had. And she just kind of went, yeah, I'll do it. I was like, oh my God. But like we had to meet up and say, right, these are the amount of weeks that we have. This is the amount of time in the week that we have. So it was like, it was fast paced.
Yeah.
Mile a minute. It is an hour long and it
You're
has...
You're very good at making that quite, like that was a good kind of cock tease. Right now I feel like, I mean, I obviously have spent the entire time thinking I really want to see the play.
Oh,
no,
great.
But I mean, now I'm kind of going, well, now I really want to see it.
Oh, fantastic.
And I only have 5 weeks in Ireland and I have lots to do. So like,
well, maybe we'll play Indiana. I was in, no, honestly, we were in New York with it. So Fish Amble, the new play company. I should say how it all came about because it's not just me on my own writing a play and all of a sudden it is all the success. So Stephanie obviously came on as director, but it was written as part of a thing called Show in a Bag for the Dublin Fringe Festival. So Show in a Bag is an initiative run by the Irish Theatre Institute, Fish Amble, the new play company and Dublin Fringe to resource theatre makers, actors with giving them production support and enabling them to put on their own piece of work, which will then tour around the country. So Show in a Bag was given the name because they said the show should be small enough to put in your car so that you can just drive around.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's no great.
So it's not a huge production.
Yeah. Really, no. Yeah. It's just about storytelling, really. And so, and there was a small stipend available for a director. So Stephanie was employed to do that. And then after its second performance in the Dublin Fringe Festival, Fish Amble, the new play company, said, we would like to offer you a we'd like to produce it basically for 2017. And
hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
2018, and now we're in 2019, and we're still going. So Fish Amble, the new play company, have given me such opportunities to see places, and I've been to Australia and like Vancouver, New York.
Oh, wow.
We went to Brighton. Like, yeah, it's just been amazing.
How many times have you performed this play then?
140.
Wow.
Yeah, I think 141 after last night. I did in Cootehill and Cavan. In New York, the Irish Arts Centre were saying if you wanted to do all of the Irish Arts Centres in region, in like Midlands, in like all over the States, you would have huge audiences. So they're like, you should absolutely look into that. So maybe I'll be going to Indiana.
I would definitely go. I would drive up to 2.5 hours.
Okay, cool.
I'm trying to think, like, Indianapolis is 2.5 hours. I'd go 2.5 hours.
I'd get my little protractor out and make sure that encapsulates your traveling distance.
Work it out in a radius.
Yeah.
And so, like, is that pretty much what you have been doing for the last 2 years? Or are there, like, loads of other bits?
It's definitely taken up the most amount of my time. I worked with a theatre company called Collapsing Horse, and we brought a play called Requiem for the Truth to Bergen in Norway in August last year. No, September. For the Norwegian Fringe Festival. That was brilliant. And it was great to have a break from doing a one-woman show because it's quite a lonely experience being out in the road. Because, you know, I get on with my stage manager, whoever it is. I've had a few.
I get on with my stage manager. They keep quitting after a week.
It's just availability. Like,
no,
however,
I know.
Yeah, however like hard it is to make a career as an actor, because there's so many people wanting to act and so few jobs. Stage managers, there's so few on the ground, so like good ones. So trying to get them and you book them for time in advance when.
And also you don't know, I guess, how long something is going to run for necessarily. Like, you know, you might know it's going to run for 2 months, but then suddenly you're like, oh shit, we want to do another month or we want to do a month here. And then they're not available because they booked something else. And
yeah,
so of course.
It's a dance. It is quite lonely, you know, and sometimes I'll come off stage and I'm like, you're in the dressing room and you're like, oh, that joke really landed tonight, eh, Mags? Like, there's nobody else there.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I'm going into rehearsals for Much Ado About Nothing. Rough Magic are putting it on for the Kilkenny Arts Festival. So we're starting rehearsals for that on Monday, next Monday.
Oh, amazing.
So there'll be a cast of nine.
And who's that directed by?
A guy called Ronan Phelan. Are we going to explain why?
You really are following him around. Go on, explain. We were talking about the one, the only Ronan Phelan before we came on air.
Yes.
So now I have to repeat the story.
I'll give the
Cliff Notes. Yeah.
So Ronan Phelan and myself are both from Malahide, and we got married in the yard when we were in junior infants. And actually, Claudine Palmer, Robbie Keane's wife, was our bridesmaid. Yeah. So,
oh my god,
it was a star-studded event.
Irish A-list are just so nepotistic. You all stick together, don't you?
So that was when we were five, and then it
was her mom, the other bridesmaid.
Oh, that would have been very
that would have been perfect.
Yeah, no, unfortunately not. So then at the age of when we were going into second class, he left Malahide and went to a different school. And so I was bereft. Couldn't see him. The only time I got to see him was at Mass. He would sing, "Lamb of God, you take away the sins of the world." And then he had this big chorus behind him, "Mercy on us." And I was like swooning away. And so that's all the context.
So Irish to be like, I was swooning at the soloist of Mass.
Obsessed with him I was. Oh, his big chocolate brown eyes. And oh, wow. I thought there was nothing like him. It would like Rona. And do you remember that thing you used to be able to do in your copybook? Ronan Phelan loves Margot McAuliffe. And you work out the percentage.
Oh, yeah.
We were 98%. I'm not even joking yet. So this is me all the way up. I'm like, shamefully, I got to say, I had a crush in Ronan all the way up to about 14, maybe even past that, if I'm being honest, because other than seeing him at a disco where he rebuffed my offer of meeting him, you know, kissing him, and seeing the back of his head and the Jervis, I then bumped into him. No, actually, my friend went to DIT, Rap Minds, and she said, a friend of mine has just started on that course. She said Ronan Phelan is on the course with her. And I was like, oh, no way, really? And she was like, yeah. She said he was asking about you. And I was like, really? And she's like, no, get over it. So she's gas. We're friends a long time.
That's also such a sister thing to do. That's only something your friend for 20 years could do and get away with.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We're still best
friends.
So
good and so mean.
So cruel. So then I didn't see him again until we were both in our late 20s and we were waiting outside the Olympia. The AMIs were on. So we were all queuing up outside on Dame Street. And I saw him. And I was like, oh my God, I have to say it. I went up to him and I was like, "Sorry, are you Ronan Phelan?" And he looked and he said, "Margaret McAuliffe, the only woman I've ever loved." So we're not together. But he's directing the play that I'm doing.
That's such a beautiful could-be love story.
I know.
Shoulda, woulda, coulda.
I know. But I'm actually, like, his boyfriend is way
cooler
nicer
than you.
And cooler and more artistic than I am. Yeah, Nathan wins hands down.
Well, I mean, it's not all about being cool and artistic, is it? I fucking hope not. I'm literally going to be single forever. So where is The Humours Abandoned? Is it still playing now? You're going into Much Ado About Nothing. Is it on pause?
It's on pause for a while. I know that we have dates planned for towards the end of the year in the Pavilion in Dunleary. We played there initially in 2017 and we had great success with it. We played it there two nights. We did such an extensive Irish tour in 2017 that I'd love to do more Irish dates, because it's only now people are hearing about it, I guess, because, yeah, you know, word of mouth. And so everyone's very enthusiastic. Like, I've never seen it. And even people like in the theatre scene in Ireland, in Dublin and beyond, are like, do you know, I've never seen that show. And so I'd love to do a few more Dublin dates, but it's just a case of finding a venue and all of that.
Yeah, yeah, and sorting it all out. Mm. And you mentioned the American tour. How would that work? You know, like if they were saying, oh, you know, you could play in Irish centres. This is a very, like, tell me the ins and outs of the theatre world.
Yeah.
But I suppose I'm wondering, who pays you? Is it based on ticket sales? Is it, is it some organisation that goes, we'll pay you to do this for X number of weeks? Or how does it work?
So there's a kind of funding body that was set up in 2005 called Culture Ireland. And they're amazing. They've been instrumental in enabling Irish artists and Irish art to travel overseas. So particularly for my touring that I've done overseas, Fish Amble, the new play company, in conjunction with Culture Ireland, have facilitated me to go to Australia. So they will look after the flights, the accommodation, and then in conjunction with various venues, they will produce the show and tour the show in their country. So it's kind of an amalgamation of loads of different people. Mm-hmm. And that's where the funding comes from. So I'm paid by Fish Amble, the new play company, and they get source their funding from lots of different places. And then there's obviously deals done on ticket sales and all that that I am completely outside of, thankfully. I would be an awful producer. And so I was very, very grateful when Fish Amble came on board to produce my show, because if it was left up to me, I wouldn't have a clue.
It sounds like a really legit and above board kind of method of money laundering. I was like, well, the money goes to this person, then goes to this person, then goes to this person, and then eventually comes to me. Maybe that's just because I've just watched Good Girls season 2 on Netflix, so I'm very interested and invested in money laundering right now.
Well, I haven't seen Good Girls. Would you recommend?
I'm always reluctant to recommend things to people because I have a really, really shit taste. And I like everything. Like, I quite enjoyed Warcraft, the movie. Okay. Which even the most avid World of Warcraft fan will tell you was dire.
And you enjoyed it for different reasons, though.
No, I just thought it was great gas.
Okay.
I just was very entertained.
Yeah.
You know, okay. I don't have high expectations from my TV and movies. I just want to go and, like,
enjoy,
be entertained for an hour and a half.
Well, there.
Good Girls. Yes, what I like about it is there are three distinct and interesting and flawed female characters who are the main characters in the show.
Do they talk about men?
Every single episode passes the Bechdel test.
I just got goosebumps.
It's about three women who are, like, relatively ordinary, who suddenly realise that they're all basically fucked and need to get money, so they rob a convenience store. And that's kind of how their life of crime begins. But they're these, like, totally average moms who suddenly turn into criminals and get caught up with this kind of drug gang. And the head of the drug gang is such a ride.
Oh.
Honestly, he's just
amazing.
So hot.
Yeah, a colossal ride is really integral in any of these.
I know.
Yeah.
And you know who else is in it? What's that actor's name? He was in She's All That. He played the guy who made the bet with Freddie Prinze Jr. Remember when he was like, I bet you can't get Lainey Boggs to win prom green or whatever it was.
I remember the moment.
And he was also in, I think he's in Varsity Blues. He was in loads of films.
I was
around that time of, like, teenage films.
When you said She's All That, I thought you were going to ask what Freddie Prinze Jr.'s name was. I didn't even have that for you.
No, so I have Freddie Prinze Jr.'s name, and I also have Gabrielle Union was in that.
Wow.
Actually, you know what? This guy played Do you remember Freddie Prinze Jr.'s... Now, this is like a deep dive into She's All That. Remember Freddie Prinze Jr.'s ex-girlfriend who breaks up with him in the very first scene? Is like, I've met someone on my holidays.
Yes.
And she's going out with this guy who's a DJ. He plays him.
Okay.
And I think he was in Road Trip. Anyway, the point is, he now plays the husband of Christina Hendricks' character. Christina Hendricks is in it. She's in it, yeah. And she's brilliant in it and also very different to her character from Mad Men.
Okay.
But he plays her like totally wrecked looking husband. And I find it very soothing because I think a lot of men in Hollywood have really improved with age and he has not. And I just was like,
he looks
that's
like
good
a normal
now.
Person.
Yeah.
Yeah, I find it ever
wrecked,
more
like.
Unsettling the more modelly acting is becoming in the States.
Yeah.
And I find it hard to like identify with the characters if they're all so ridiculously good looking.
Yeah.
It's not an honest depiction of what people actually look like.
And that's actually what's good about this as well, not to turn this into an entire conversation about good girls, but Christina Hendricks is the most traditionally beautiful of the three women.
Okay.
They're all definitely very attractive. One of the women is black and she is like very, very heavy.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, because I like using the word fat when people are fat, because I think it's important not to be afraid of using the word fat.
Absolutely.
And like I use it about myself, but I'm also reluctant to use it about other people because sometimes people don't want to be called fat, if you know what I mean. So she is,
so if you're listening,
a larger lady.
You're listening.
And then there's
no offense made.
Another woman, and I can't remember the name of her, can't remember the name of the actor who plays her, but I follow her on Instagram and she's just mad looking. She's like, good. Like she's really in, she's one of these really interesting looking
striking,
people.
They say.
Very striking.
Mm.
Like very attractive, but also just, you wouldn't think to draw her.
Mm.
Shouldn't be, just mad looking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mad looking little thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But like gorgeous, but they're all very cool. But yes,
and
yes,
talented.
I recommend
they're
that.
They're good in their roles, yeah.
Much as I'd like to keep going on about the shit that I watch on Netflix. So the next thing that you've got going is Much Ado About Nothing.
Much Ado About Nothing. And also I've been approached by a
modelling agency.
Yeah. This 36-year-old just been snapped up.
Listen,
walking
they
the streets
need models
of, Dublin.
Of all ages these days.
Thanks very much. I was approached by a film production company to option Humans Abandoned to turn it into a feature.
Oh, so wow.
You might be able to see a version of it on the screen.
And would you be in it or would that be...
I would certainly want to put my hat in the ring, but it wouldn't be ego-driven. Because I would be interested in making the best possible film that I could make. And if I'm wrong for a part, I would want the right character to play it to really give it that integrity that I've written. So, I was even talking about this with somebody recently and they said, oh, would you want to play the teacher? And I said, no, I'm not right for the teacher. And they were like, but you play it in your play. And I'm like, yeah, but there's someone that can play it better and I have someone in mind. I'd like
it's
to play the
Stephanie Preisner.
No, it's not Stephanie Preisner. But I'd like to play the mother. And she's like, oh, but the teacher's a much bigger part. And I was like, yeah, but I'm right for the mother. Do you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
for
yeah.
me, it's about, yeah, getting the right person for the role. And then even if by the time we get to casting, fingers crossed this all goes ahead, they seem to think it will.
Yeah.
They're very enthusiastic about the prospect because, again, it's a female-driven story. It's a hero's journey and it's not to do with a man. It's not to do with a boy or anything like that.
And it's also like... So my mom, every time I talk about writing any kind of book, my mom says, you know what you do now, write it in Irish, because then it'll get in the curriculum. So this is a similarly strategic thing that I was going to say is, but Irish dancing does very well in America.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So like there would be an audience, do you know what I mean? For like, I don't know that there
and
are any
in Asia,
films
and in Australia.
About,
and yeah, it's huge
like
worldwide.
I don't know that there are any films about Irish dancing, like feature films.
No. Well, like this documentary that you should check out,
Jig.
Is excellent.
I really want to see that little Dairy Girl.
Oh, she's so cute.
I just watched
so
Dairy Girl season 1 10 years after everyone else
so
on the
good.
Plane over to Chicago.
Oh my God.
And I was like,
turn the plane around!
No, is that season 2? I haven't got to that point.
All right, okay. No, I just meant like
sorry,
it
you
was
just
so
mean,
good
oh,
and you were
yeah,
leaving
yeah, yeah.
Ireland.
Sorry. No, I get you. I was like, what? When are they on a plane? You've ruined it for me. Yeah, but it's actually so funny. And then I was talking to some American guy and he said, I told a friend of mine that I met an Irish girl and he asked, had you seen the Titanic exhibition in Ireland? And I said, well, no, I haven't, but you know that's in Northern Ireland. And he said, what do you mean? And I said, that's not technically the Republic of Ireland. And he said, what do you mean? And I said, well, when the UK, blah, blah, blah. And he had no clue.
Mm.
And it made, and like Derry Girls made me feel very patriotic. And then these conversations make me feel real like everyone should watch Derry Girls. You should all know what we went through. Like through the lens of comedy is fine, but you should know.
Yeah, I think she's done a great job juxtaposing the comedy and then the end. So you watched the end of series one, that last episode.
Yes.
Where they're all on stage having that big like
dance.
Yeah, yeah, and then it cuts to...
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that for me is the genius of the show.
Oh, it was so clever.
That you've
so
juxtaposed clever. Those two. And yeah, you've set this all in, you know, at a time in the Troubles. And yet people, it's everyday life. You know, people got on with things. You know, they still were teenage girls.
Yeah,
and
of
this
course.
Is what they got up to.
And like their big problems are not to do with that.
Yeah.
But they also are.
Yes. Yeah.
Like it was so well done. Yeah, and even the checkpoints throughout and the mentions of the money, you know, like, did you get your punts? Have you got your, like, what do you mean? You know, the things that we
and the disdain for her.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh my God, it's so good.
For Tommy Tiernan's character.
But there's also nothing... Oh my God, that was great. But there's also nothing like... There's nothing like going to a foreign country to bring out the absolute, like, fierce patriotism in you.
Oh,
I had a
it.
Big fight with some American person about the word Gaelic.
Okay.
And I was like, that is a sport, not a language. And he was like, what? And I was like, it's not a language. Our language is called Gaelga, if you're speaking Irish, and otherwise it's called Irish if you're speaking English. And he was like, is it not Gaelic? And I was like, stop talking. Stop talking right now.
I'd really love to see you have these head-to-heads with these Americans. That would be its own show. Because you're just so steely, so deadpan. The dead eyes.
No. Do you have anything else you'd like to plug? Sorry, Much Ado About Nothing. When and where is that going to be?
That is on as part of the Kilkenny Arts Festival. It is on from the 8th until the 18th. I think I've got that right. It might either 18th or 19th. 8th to the 19th, say, of August in Kilkenny.
Oh, God, so that's a quick turnaround then. If you're like, so you're starting rehearsals...
On Monday. So we have four weeks rehearsals.
That is a quick turnaround, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, 4 weeks. I think, yeah, we wanted... I think the director wanted five. But, then there was an extra cast member. Anyway, like it's four
acting
weeks.
Acting is mad, really. I'd be like, let's aim for a solid 12.
In it's gas. And I mean, they're the weeks change based on the shows and what funding opportunities are available to people and stuff. So I've known shows that have taken 8 weeks to put on, and I was in a show that took 6 weeks to put on. You know, 4 weeks, and then most recently I went to see a show in the Abbey that they had a 2 week rehearsal period, and I just couldn't understand how they got what they got.
Was it
on.
Rubbish though?
No, it was like it had loads in it. Like there was just it was just a colossal piece of work.
Have you ever been to see the 24-hour plays?
Yeah, I was in one.
The DYT ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I went to one. I've been to two shows because my cousin is really involved with DYT.
Oh right. Who's
so
your cousin?
Roseanne Smith.
Oh, I don't know Roseanne. Roseanne Rosemary,
yeah. But I've been to two of them, and that's basically where they have 24 hours from concept to production.
Yeah.
And it's amazing.
Execution. Yeah, no, yeah. It's incredible. It's you're high. Like I was walking around, like I felt high.
Do you sleep in the 24 hours?
The actors do. The writers don't sleep until they've their play written, and then they can sleep.
Someone.
Yeah, but they have to have their like eye masks on because they're sleeping at you know. They're going to bed when everyone's getting up. It's a great cause, and it's very exciting, and just to see what can be achieved in 24 hours is astounding.
Yeah.
It's a great initiative. They make a lot of money. For Dublin Theatre. It's excellent. It's really worked out.
Max, thank you so much.
Thank you
for taking the time,
Abe,
to come and teach me more about how to be sound. How to be.
Would you not just call it like being sound with Rosemary McCabe?
No. So the reason I called it How to Be Sound is because I thought the idea that I would know how to be sound was kind of funny. You know, that it was kind of like tongue in cheek, because at the time I was getting a lot of shit online from people who were just like, oh, I hate her. She's such a pain. She's such a smug bitch. She's always doing this. She's always doing that.
What?
So, yeah. So I, like from my point of view, this was kind of a like fight back going, this is kind of funny to go, I'm going to call my podcast How to Be Sound. And next thing you know, there's a post. Did you see she's launching a podcast called How to Be Sound? What would she know about it? I was like, that's the fucking point, you idiots.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry you have to put up with that.
Well, thanks very much. It's calmed down a lot since I put up all of my writing behind a paywall. So now the only people who read it are people who actually want to, which is nice.
That is nice.
Yeah, it's very nice. Yeah. I've protected myself with a financial force field.
I'm good. I'm glad. I'm glad.
How can people stalk you online if they want to?
I'm moi underscore mags on Instagram.
That's French.
I know. Moi mags. Although any French person I've ever introduced myself to has dropped the S for some reason. Chefs, waiters down the line, they'd be like, Maga.
What?
Yeah. They're like, there's only one of you, Maga. So, moi underscore mags. And
is that Instagram and Twitter?
That's, I think so.
Yeah, I think it is Twitter as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I like it. You know, it's cute. I also have, I've started this thing now, because with the amount of touring I'm doing, I'm like entertaining myself in the dressing room because there's no other co-stars with me. Co-stars. Get her. It's not suits, Mags. It's the humans about
You're the only star.
So to entertain myself, I do this thing called hashtag backstage snacks with an X. And it's just to show you what people give you before you go out and do a show in various different theatres.
And what's the worst thing you've ever been given?
Well, nothing. But that's not bad because they're not in the habit of providing it or whatever. And that's like, I wouldn't say that's bad at all. Like, okay. I just get a kick out of it.
But like, what's the
it.
Weirdest thing you've ever been given before a show?
Well, just last night I was given a pair of Irish dancing shoes, a pair of palms and three pairs of poodle socks.
Well, that sounds like the best thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's also the weirdest thing. Like, I couldn't believe my luck or, you know, their generosity. Yeah. It was like, what? But in terms of like odd things, I got a huge box of snacks and refreshments and tea and Barocca. And they had, this is in Australia, in the Illawarra Performing Arts Centre in Wollongong, which is like an hour and a half south of Sydney. And in it, they had given me a packet of Marmite breaded, like mini slices of baguette that were Marmite flavoured.
Australians are very uncivilised. Did you eat any of them? I mean, hopefully not before.
I ate the whole bag.
Did you? Yeah. Oh my God, were they gross?
I was picking. I was, what's that, grazing?
You look really sad about the fact that you ate. You're like, I am ate really all, sad like, about didn't it. Enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a bad move.
And what's
the weirdest thing. They gave me...
Weirder than that?
Yeah. It was in Riverside in Parramatta. They gave me this aniseed, yang seed sweet. And you opened it up and it was like half date, half aniseed, chewy and crunchy. And it was like an avocado. There was a hard thing in the middle. That was the oddest thing I've ever received.
Did you eat them all as well?
No, I only took a tiny bit at the corner and I was like, no, I can't do this. Yeah. I think I was influenced by the fact that I'd eaten the Marmite things. I thought, no, Megs, you don't have to eat this now.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, like, if you can eat them, you can eat anything.
No, I was like, you ate them. That's on you.
That's
now.
Your sacrifice. And what's the best pre-game food?
I think in Connecticut, I played in Whitneyville. She's not from there. But I was like, is she from here? No. It's just called Whitneyville, Connecticut.
They have the best, the best town names in America.
I know, don't they?
It's one of my favorite. Like, I love when they have towns called like Disgrace, Despair, Misery.
What? Really?
Yeah, I love those town names.
Are they all in Indiana?
Probably. I'm actually not sure. No. I mean, I think they're probably all in the Midwest.
Okay. But cool.
I mean, some of them could be odd. Made up from a Jack Reacher novel. Go on.
Whitneyville, Connecticut. They were just really, really sweet. They had like a big box of jumbo sized fruit, lots of different melons and grapes and stuff like that. But they were like the size of your fist. And then they got me like lion's tea and they got me like Tato cheese
cute.
And onion because they thought, oh, she's Irish. I'm like, yeah, but I'm going back
there
next week.
They weren't the Northern Irish ones, were they?
No, but I'd say they were knocking around Imported. In some convenience store for quite a while. I was like, oh, thanks. It was just really, the hall was so sweet. I was just so taken aback. They were lovely there. They were so enthusiastic about the show as well. Anyone in America is just...
God, what would I want? I mean, I actually just couldn't... If I was going on to do a show where I in any way had to be physical, like I presume there's a bit of dancing, is there?
Oh, there's a bit of dancing,
bit
yeah.
of dancing. If I had to do anything, I basically couldn't eat for about 20... Like I get really bad gas.
Yeah.
So anything I ate,
For me, it's reflux. There's a point in the show, and it's always when I go over to get a pair of shoes, and I'm putting them on, and I'm doing a little monologue, and I lean down because I'm sitting on a table, and I'm leaning down to do the laces. And if I've eaten, like within 3 hours, actually, of the show, I'll just.
Oh yeah,
it's like in school. I like maths. No, but I really do like maths.
Well, there's something very. I don't know, like it was grand when I was a kid, but as I've got older now, when I have to tie my shoelaces, my stomach sometimes just gets in the way. You know, yeah. It's very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
That's why everyone should have a PA.
A maid.
A handmaid. No. what was it called? Like in Downton Abbey.
I mean,
they were maids, but like what were they called? Ladies' maids or something? Oh, everybody should have one of those. A lady maid. Up your corset and your shoes.
Corset, want me into a corset now? I'd say they just have permanent reflux.
I'd say Kim Kardashian's never had a bit of gas in her life. How dare you?
She also doesn't use the bathroom and, you know, all of that.
Oh, you shouldn't use the bathroom for the whole thing. Listen. Yeah, listen,
we could go on.
Liam's looking tired. Oh, sorry. Before you go, speaking of Liam, I should mention that you were also in Petrified.
I was in Petrified.
Which was a...
horror podcast.
A horror podcast. A horror dramatization podcast, which recently won bronze at the New York Podcast. Yay! New York Radio Awards. New York Radio Awards? New York Radio Awards.
New York Radio Awards.
Well done!
In addition to that, his own podcast, Meet Your Maker, also got bronze at the New York Radio Awards. Is this bad to say?
Are you his best friend or am I his best friend? How dare you? Mags, thank you very much for coming on How to Be Sound and for stealing my best friend Thunder at the very end. And speaking of Liam, who has won not one, but two bronze medals at the New York Radio Awards, he produces my podcast, is a wonderful human being, and you can listen to Meet Your Maker. Anywhere you get this podcast, you can look it up on meetyourmaker.ie. Thank you all so much for listening to How to Be Sound. And if you are not already, please subscribe to my Patreon, patreon.com/RosemaryMcCabe with an A in my Max, an A in my Mac. I talk about loads of things, including dating, finance, feminism, and I tell the story about the father of four in the open marriage with whom I went on a date in Indiana. And you could read all about that on Patreon. And by the look on Mag's face, she's going off to sign up right now because she's dying to hear that story. Thank you so much, and I will catch you next time.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.